Welcome to another edition of Stokes and Folks. I'm your host, Spencer Stokes, and this is the beginning of season two. I know many of you have been thinking, gosh, I just started listening to season one. This is season two. We're going to do two seasons a year, 6 months apiece, but this is season two, episode one. And today we have a special guest joining us. I get lots of feedback that people want to hear more about past campaigns, more about things that happened in politics. And so today we're joined by Greg Hopkins, who I first met when he was executive director of the Republican Party, and your offices were over on 4th South and almost 7th East.
That's right.
And you were in an old movie buffs space at one time.
That's correct.
Before they were shut down.
The whole industry's gone away.
Exactly. And we are going to be talking today about just reflections of the 1992 campaign, which is coming upon 30 years. Our executive producer, Connor Sorensen, was not born when these stories will be told. But 1992, tell us what you were doing in 1992 and whose campaign you started out on. It was an open Senate seat. Jake Garn was retiring.
It was an open Senate seat. I was the executive director of the Republican Party in the previous campaign cycle, 1990. And I was approached by Ted Stewart, who had been chief of staff to Congressman Jim Hansen. We're going way.
This is way back.
Way back.
Yeah.
Ted and I were friends, and Ted came to me and said he was running for the Senate. It was an uphill battle all the way because Joe Cannon had already announced, was well into the race, had spent lots and lots of money already. But Ted wanted to take a run at it, and I said, okay, let's go. And so I began running that race as Ted Stewart's campaign manager.
And that was back in the day when caucuses were king and the state convention was king, and it would nominate two people to go to the primary. There was a primary if you didn't come out clean out of the convention. And back then, right, I think clean was 70%.
70% at the time.
Yeah. And the so we had Joe Cannon. We had Bob Bennett. We had Ted Stewart. Do you remember any of the others? Yeah, Brent, that's right. Brent Ward was running.
There were others. I can't remember. But those, they were the four who everyone thought would be...
They were the front runners.
They were the front runners for sure.
And the convention was held in Weber County, which was the only
Your
time...
Your neck of the woods.
The only time that the state convention's been held, I believe, for was in 1992 off the Wasatch Front North. And... But what's even more stunning is, do you remember how many delegates there were? Weren't there like 3,000, something like that?
I believe there were 5,000.
5,000? Okay.
I think so.
And you just, it was hand-to-hand combat. You were just going from delegate to delegate, trying to get as many of them in front of Ted, because he was That's amazing. Right. If you got in front of Ted, you're probably going to vote with him.
Ted was amazing, and Ted just hit the road. We didn't have money like the other guys. And you have to remember that Joe owned Geneva Steel and had lots of resources. Bob Bennett had just taken his public Franklin Quest at the time that became Franklin Covey, had just taken it public. So he had lots and lots of resources. And Ted, we went throughout the state, and Ted was on the telephone, or he was at a breakfast meeting, or he was meeting with delegates in their homes, you know, 18 hours a day. That's how we did it.
It's got to be grueling for a family. And Ted has a very political family to this day. His kids are all political. His family members are political. I've heard them talk about family reunions, and they seem like the most boring event in the world, because they discuss white papers, you know, on different topics, right, at their family reunions. But he just went out, didn't have a job, at the time because he was campaigning full time.
That's right.
And this is back when the convention, you could go out and do that kind of thing. But you get to the convention. I remember the convention. We had Joe Cannon had Lee Greenwood. I don't know what Bob had or didn't have.
Well, that convention was a wild time because there was so much money spent. I think it was completely unprecedented at the time. Lee Greenwood coming in, really?
Yeah.
And Joe brought him in, and, you know, the Bennett campaign, they spent lots of money on day planners that they were giving out to people. I mean, it was crazy.
A Franklin Quest planner for you, a Franklin Quest planner for you. Everybody got one.
It was unseemly. I mean, it was almost like bribery.
It was a two-day convention, if I remember.
It was a two-day convention, and it was a wild time. I remember a big, do you remember this? A big tower fell down or something?
Out on the grounds?
Out on the grounds, about smashed. I mean, it was just wild. And a lot of money spent. Well, we didn't have any money. Ted Stewart didn't have any money. Those guys had spent well into maybe multiple millions of dollars at that time. Those guys being Joe Cannon and Bob Bennett.
And Brent Ward didn't have any money either.
Brent didn't either. But Brent had a good name, was U.S. attorney, and was a solid guy. But I think that we spent something like $60,000
through the whole convention campaign. The whole campaign. Well, I guess the convention ended it.
Because the convention ended it, which, you know, we were never, in all the polling that we did, we didn't do much, but, you know, we canvassed delegates. And in all those canvasses, we were never even close. Joe was way out ahead. And Ted gave this stem winder of a speech.
I remember it.
At the convention, and convinced lots and lots of people.
The convention speeches, I keep saying this, and I don't know whether people believe me or not, but the convention speech is worth, you know, 20, 30 percentage points. I mean, it's a massive, to nail a convention speech is worth a lot of percentage, a lot of votes.
Lots of votes. Or to bomb a convention speech.
Oh, also.
Speech has been deadly for people.
Right. Yeah. I think he ended it with, the Benjamin Franklin, you have a republic here if you can keep it, something like there was a mic drop ending of his speech.
I do remember it. I don't remember what it was.
Yeah, but it was.
It made an impact.
It made an impact. It was amazing. And we did have multiple rounds of balloting back then.
That's right.
And so
I had forgotten.
And so the which took a while because it was all, they were all punch card ballots. And I think Brent was the others obviously dropped out. Brent dropped out. But then it was down to the three candidates left because Joe didn't get a clean 70%. And I believe that Ted was, how many votes away was he from beating Bob at the convention?
So my recollection is that we needed to turn 17 votes. And we would have
been in the primary.
So I think it was probably a margin of like 34 votes.
Okay. And what do you think would have happened in the primary against the Joe Cannon money?
I think that Ted would have been destroyed. As great a candidate as he was, and he was a great candidate, and you know, just a really solid guy, and people know that he went on to be a distinguished federal judge. But I just don't think he could have overcome that Joe Cannon money. And Bob Bennett had the good fortune of having liquid money because of his, public event with his company. And that made the difference when we got to the primary.
I know everybody thought, because Joe had been in it for so long, he'd been campaigning for a year ahead of everybody else, if I remember right. A long time ahead of everybody else.
Right.
And everyone was like, well, he's just, you know, who can compete with the spending when it became Bob and Joe? But I don't think everybody knew that Bob had cash.
Yeah.
And a lot of it. And he spent it at the right time. But what happened to you after you were on the Ted Stewart campaign? What happened next?
Well, I took the weekend off and you know, I had people from Joe's camp. I knew Joe.
Mm-hmm.
I knew the people running him. He had a cast of thousands.
Right, right.
And a lot of people, I wasn't really sure who was in charge, but there were lots of them. And they approached me and said, come and work for us. I had developed a friendship with a guy named Mike Thompson, who was working for Bob Bennett. And Mike said, come and, you know, come and work for us. We haven't done this before. Nobody on that campaign had ever been through a campaign, except for Bob Bennett, who was a great sure. political mind. But in terms of the staff, nobody had been through it. And I just felt against, you know, all rational thought that I had to go help those guys. And I had gotten to know Bob a little bit on the campaign trail and really liked him, really had a lot of respect for him. And so that's what I did.
Bob was a great storyteller.
Yes, he was.
He could get you involved in a story, but he came out with, you know, so Joe Cannon probably what 68% of the vote, and Bob, you know, 32 or 33, something like that.
Yeah, I think that Joe was very close to. I mean, I think he was in the 60s somewhere, and so, you know, he was the prohibitive front runner going into that primary. And we polled a lot. We were in the field almost constantly throughout that entire primary. And I can tell you that we were never, ever in that race until the last weekend. And whenever anybody asks me anything about politics, my answer is timing is everything.
And that was back when you could time your messaging based on a one-day of balloting.
Exactly.
And it's much different nowadays when you have a month and a half to try to message to people.
Yes.
You had one day so you could time everything. You could time the time that your mail dropped. You could time the ad campaign, the television buy, the radio buy. And the only thing I remember about it is, I remember a lot of things about it, but I one of the key factors was the him standing in front of kind of a crinkly white or gray backdrop or whatever it was, with a holding a postcard, looking at the camera and saying, this is how you should be able to file your taxes on this postcard.
Yep. Well, the advertising for that campaign was excellent, done by Evan Tweed and Rick Evans, who went on to become the author Richard Paul Evans. And those guys were excellent. And Evan put together these fast-moving ads with lots and lots of cuts, lots of energy in them. And Bob was a natural performer. And those ads just kept cutting in to Joe's lead over time. And I remember our polling in the week prior to the election, we were about 7 points down. We really were never ahead in the polling. We were only ahead on election day.
So timing was perfect.
Timing was perfect.
So what do you remember about any of the debates? You know, Joe, we all love Joe. We love Bob, but Joe would have to tell you how to build the clock in an answer, and Bob, like you said, could succinctly nail something and was a natural in front of the camera.
Yeah.
Did they have debates? Did they have
debates? They had debates, and, you know, Joe was very good. Joe was knowledgeable. You get down in the weeds, and Joe understood policy. And I can remember specifically Joe kind of tearing Bob up over a value-added tax that Bob was proposing, and Joe just went after him and explained how stupid that was. And he was very, very good. But the thing of it is, Bob, as you mentioned, was a great storyteller. He was a natural debater. He was a debater in college. And he, you know, was better with the sound bites, better with being clear and concise and succinct. And that just helped him a lot.
Was Wallace still alive?
Wallace was still alive when Bob was elected to the Senate. And I have this picture in my mind of Bob and Wallace together, Wallace in a wheelchair on election night.
Oh, interesting. I'm digressing from the campaign, but one of the favorite photographs that you have, I'm assuming you still have it in your office, was you in California with Bob and President Reagan, all sitting on the couch chatting, which had to have been a fun moment for a political hack.
Oh yeah. That was like a great moment for a political hack like me. We went to his Burbank office. I think it was Burbank, where his office was. This was right after his presidency had ended. It was before he had been diagnosed with Alzheimer's. But he looked like a million bucks and walked into the room and took command of that room. And it was a joy there for an hour to sit with him. But I have to say that you could tell that he had slowed down considerably, and that the Alzheimer's had taken
its initial
effect. And he was delightful to talk to, talked a lot about his ranch and what he was doing and what he and Nancy were doing. But he didn't want to engage on any issues. That was over for him at that point.
Well, he would have known Wallace. Right. I don't know how the entree was made to go down and sit down with him, but he would have had to have known Wallace, I'm assuming.
Oh, I'm sure he did know Wallace. You know, Wallace was there for four terms. So that's a long time. And Reagan had been the darling of the conservative movement for a long time. So I'm sure that they knew each other, but I don't know what it was. Bob did work at some point on the Reagan campaign. I can't remember the details of that.
During every campaign, there's always something that stands out, some story that stands out during the campaign that you'll never forget. What was it on this campaign?
There were many bizarre moments. There was a bizarre moment when a congressional candidate got up in a county convention and said, "Be very careful who you vote for. I may be one of the three Nephites." That was a good moment on the county convention circuit. But there was a weird thing that happened on primary election day where we got a call that was something to do with Mike Leavitt, who was also running for governor.
Right. And he was in a primary with Richard Iyer.
He was in a primary with Richard Iyer. And there was somebody handing out literature with a Bob Bennett t-shirt on at Foothill Mall, literature that said Mike Leavitt had killed a man in a barroom brawl. And so I raced up to Foothill, and apparently the Cannon campaign and the Leavitt campaign had all gotten this crank call.
So you meant everybody was there.
So I saw Joe Cannon over in his car, and I saw Mike Leavitt over in a car, and it was just a crank call, but we all believed it enough to go hunt it down. It was bizarre.
So you never found it. There was no person there. It was
no,
just...
there was no person there. It was just a crank call to the campaigns on election day. So that was fun.
So, on primary election day, there were, I mean, I look, Richard Iyer was a strong candidate.
Yes,
against Mike Leavitt. Joe Cannon, a strong candidate against Bob Bennett. I mean, that's, this would have been, I don't know what the turnout was in 92 primary, but the primary was held in September, right? It was late. Now we hold it in June. It was later, so it was, which is one of the reasons it changed, because everybody said we just as candidates beat everybody up between yeah. May and September, and then you had to try to repair the damage when you were facing your Democrat opponent. Do you remember who your Democrat opponent was?
Oh, sure, it was Wayne Owens.
Oh, okay.
Which is another interesting part of that whole campaign. But just, can I just bring closure to the primary? Because on election night, we knew we were close. And, this just, speaks to Bob Bennett as an individual. And we walked to the hotel together, and I said, how do you feel, Bob? And he said, I feel really great. He said, I'm either going to go to Washington as a senator, or I'm going to go on a mission for my church, and I'm happy with either one. And Bob was the most level-headed guy that I've ever met in politics. He did not get caught up in it, and I think he was a great senator because of that. And, you know, represented the state well. Joe Cannon would have represented the state well, as would have Brent Ward, as would have Ted Stewart. It was a great field.
Well, yeah, it was an amazing, you just had in every case, you know, quality individuals running.
Right.
And, you know, the Wayne Owens is a formidable candidate, and the state hadn't made, I believe this to be true, really the full shift to being dominated by Republicans the way it is today. And so Wayne Owens, I'm sure you had sleepless nights on that one too.
Well, yes. Although, you know, we had lots of money and we had lots of momentum coming out of that primary. And the interesting thing is I had been involved with four campaigns against Wayne. Beginning in 1986, I ran the Tom Shimizu campaign for Congress against Wayne. And Wayne taught us a lesson about campaigning.
Right, okay.
He destroyed us.
Because there wasn't a... I've never heard Congressman Shimizu.
Nope, so you never heard that. And so...
what was the second one?
And then as the executive director in 88 and 90, I was involved in those congressional campaigns.
Okay, got it.
Okay, against Wayne. But Wayne was a gracious guy. I really liked him, and I appreciate his position on issues much more now than I did as a young man. And I think he was a great representative for our state. I really do. But in that campaign, there were two interesting things that went on. In our polling, we showed that Wayne was hurting Bob with seniors. He was out there on the stump saying, Bob's going to, you know, Bob talked about entitlement reform. And so Wayne was out there saying, Bob's going to take away your Social Security.
That was a real debate, because during the Reagan years, of course, Social Security was talked about a lot, and so that wasn't, you know, 88 was, see, the end of the Reagan years, and this is 1992, so it was semi-fresh on everybody's mind.
Right.
So it was believable,
It was a believable threat. Hit, and it was an effective hit, and we looked at the polling, and doing some damage. The other thing that he started to bring up was Bob's involvement in Watergate.
Oh, that's right.
And he had committed to Bob that he would never bring that up. And but he started putting ads out that were very tough, attack ads on Bob, saying that he was involved in Watergate. And that was making some impact as well. So the first thing is, with the Watergate charge, I had remembered that I heard a radio interview on KSL with Wayne Owens when it looked like Joe Cannon was going to be the candidate.
Right.
Wayne saying on the air, no, Bob Bennett was not involved in Watergate.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. So I went to KSL. I found that. I dug it out of the archives. And we cut an ad with Bob, you know, pushing the button of my old boom box with a cassette in it.
For those younger listeners, a cassette was like the modern streaming.
That's right. And Bob pushes the button on the box and says, here's Wayne Owens in his own words. And we just repeated over and over Wayne saying, no, Bob Bennett was not involved in Watergate.
But and it was sure...
That was a very effective ad.
It was sure fun to think about him being Deep Throat.
Oh, yes.
Actually, now that you mention it, I do remember that ad. I thought it was brilliant, but it was your you'd come up with the, or remembered it. Oftentimes that's what happens in campaigns. Yeah. Somebody remembers something, you know, you go find it and get the audio recording. But then you just had it on the boom box.
I mean, we just put it on the air that way, and it was very effective. And on the Social Security stuff, John Harmer, who was secretly working on that campaign, not secretly, but he was a consultant, and you know,
on which campaign?
On our campaign.
Okay, on the Bennett campaign.
John came to me and said, "We've got to stop this Social Security thing." He said, "I've got Gordon Jump lined up to cut an ad for us."
No kidding.
And so I jumped on an airplane, early flight out of Salt Lake to L.A. So there was nothing digital back then. We had to go.
You had to literally bring the file back.
Had to literally bring the file back. So
the film back.
I flew to L.A. I went to a studio. I met Gordon Jump there. He did the ad in about four takes. And he did a great job. And then he said, "No, let me do one more. Just let me do one more." And, you know, at the end of that ad, he said, "You know, you ought to be ashamed, Wayne, for accusing Bob of taking away your Social Security." And that was a very effective ad. And at that point...
Is that the one you ran?
Wayne was done. Yeah, that's the one we ran.
And for those who also don't know this, Gordon Jump was a Mormon actor in WKRP in Cincinnati, and also appeared in other LDS church films.
And was also the refrigerator repairman.
Oh, that's right. That? The Maytag refrigerator repairman.
So he had a profile here, and those were effective ads. And at that point, Wayne was done.
He was that era's Gladys Knight.
Yes.
for Mormons. And so it was him looking in the camera saying, "You ought to be ashamed." I can just hear it. Yeah. I can just hear his voice saying
in that WKRP character.
Right.
Voice.
Right. Yeah. And so, but you obviously were worried about your polling had to have shown that it was being effective.
Yeah. There was some erosion and we felt like we needed to shut it down. You know, could Wayne have beat us? It would have had to been the perfect storm. But still, you know, those were the steps that we took to just sort of shut down his momentum and Bob breezed to victory. And, of course, he was never challenged by a Democrat again. It took a Republican to take him out.
Right. I one of the things I wasn't planning on talking about, but I just remember as we're talking about going through the timeline, then you went back and was Bob's first chief of staff.
Correct.
For what, 2 years?
Yeah, I was only there for, I guess, 3 years as his chief of staff. And I left, came back to Utah, and, you know, did other business-related stuff, and but then ran all of his campaigns. Where was the chairman of his campaign?
So, look, we're looking at, and this just says that you can maintain friendships in politics, Bob Bennett's first chief of staff, Mike Lee's first chief of staff, both kind of unlikely. I never expected to do that. You probably never expected to go back and do that. You were single at the time, though, when you went back to be his first chief of staff, right?
Yes, I was.
Yeah. Okay.
And I met my wife back there.
Well, that's a whole other show. That's a political show. Dating show. Hey, Greg, thanks for being here. I've always enjoyed our friendship. We'll stay in touch. And this has been the first episode of season 2 of Stokes and Folks. Make sure you download us wherever you get your podcasts. Like us, leave comments, all those great things. Help us with the algorithm. And we'll see you. Or I always say we'll see you. You'll hear us next week. And thank you to Connor Sorensen, our executive producer. Until next week.